I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for the first rest day recap of the Tour de France 2021 here with Benji as usual. This show is supported by Lacole, who produce performance cycling apparel. Let us know, have you bought any Lacole kit? Have you used our LRTDF20 discount code? Just a quick note from me, some housekeeping. If you want to support the podcast, some of the best ways to do it are to leave a like or subscribe to the YouTube channel of the podcast if that's where you watch/listen to it. And if you listen on podcast players, we don't mind where you listen or watch, makes no difference to us really. Then just give us a rating or a review. We also have a Ko-fi link where all donations go directly to improving the quality of the podcast. We also have our show partner, Lacole. They produce performance cycling apparel. It's getting super hot now. It's going to be hot in the Pyrenees when they come down. I can confirm today it's really, really hot. I was wearing Lacole's new lightweight collection this morning. And yeah, it's like 25 degrees plus. And it feels hotter than Australia, which is really, really weird. But the lightweight collection is awesome on long climbs or wherever, really. It's made of breathable fabrics and lightweight materials. If you want to pick up any of the kit from Lacole, you can use code LRTDF20 to get 20% off. So thanks to Lacole for supporting the podcast. But we've got a few things we're going to touch on in this recap. We're not going to go through every single stage that's happened. We're going to go winners and losers of the first week. Preview the next six stages briefly, preview stage 10 in a bit more detail. We're talking about Cavendish green jersey ambitions, plus can he break Merckx's record? Jumbo Visma, what should they do next with Roglic going home? And obviously, I'm going to do a bit of a self-roast of my Velo Games. We might touch on a few things here and there as we go through as well. It's like the GC podium battle. But what have you been up to, Benji? Making PCM content. What happens on a PCM rest day?
Well, actually, I've been sleeping a lot today. So I've woke up like, we're recording it at like 2 p.m. and I've slept until like noon today. And it's the first time in like ages I've done that. So I guess I'm happy about it. But it's a rest day as well for me. I am planning to just rest for the next coming week because the last week was pretty crazy instead of the normal, usual gradual rise of tension in the Grand Tour. It was hammering from stage one. So yeah, it's good that it was.
Here are my winners. Quickstep, Alaphilippe goes into yellow, plus they take three stages. Bahrain have taken two stages, Moritz and Turns. Pogacar wins the stage and has got GC seemingly wrapped up. And Alpecin Phoenix, despite us roasting them a little bit about stages four and six, they still won two stages and had Van der Poel in yellow for six stages. So that's obviously kicking their goals out of the park before the Tour de France. And I think Ida Schelling as well. Ida Schelling, I'm not sure how many days he wore the polka dot jersey for, at least four, I think, three or four. He had a great first week as well and just goes to show what you can do if you target, the KOM classification. I think he was wearing it, for like four stages plus. Who are your winners, Benji, before we go to the losers?
I think there's a few. We've got, obviously, Alpecin with the way they've ridden this first week. They didn't have perfect strategies when it comes to the flat sprints in my eyes. They tried to get Philipsen either a stage win or points for the green jersey. And they could have gotten one or two sprint wins with Merlier, in my honest opinion. But nonetheless, except for that wonderful first week for them, their first Tour de France, and they've got a yellow jersey with Van der Poel for multiple days, I think six in total or something. And then you've got the same stage win already in pure dominant fashion, obviously partially due to the crashes as well, that the group was so reduced in that stage. But a 1-2 in that stage is just pure sprinting dominance. And I think that they're definitely one of the winners. And I think we can't deny that UAE is one of the winners as well. We had a bit of a moment on stage seven where we were like, okay, they did just show a crazy big weakness team-wise. People can abuse that. But the problem is that so many of the competitors just hit the ground that they've got half a team to try and abuse that weakness of UAE. So it's almost impossible to try and get over that and try and beat that strategy now, because the teams against them is just their strength has reduced so much. And Yumbo is one of those. And I think that's not necessarily their fault, but one of the losers for me.
Yeah, for sure. Jumbo Visma, because I'm making a recap video on my main channel. Jumbo Visma have crashed with the Fan crash, then Geraint Thomas crashing, Martin and Hesink. Then Jonas has crashed, I think, at least four times in this Tour de France.
Three, I think.
Some his own fault. Roglic crashed into the ditch with the Colbrelli thing. They've crashed so many times. And, yeah, some have been maybe – most have not been their fault, actually. The vast majority have not been their fault at all. And I think – and then they got unlucky with the weather, because Kuss and Roglic, I think they prefer 25 and sunny to 12 degrees and raining. And we saw that Vuelta stage last year. We still don't know what happened when Roglic lost time and Kuss lost like 10 minutes. That was the main rainy day. So, yeah, they've had a terrible first week. And it's Roglic going home as well. I think Sagan had a bad first week as well. Obviously, Ewan crashing him, not his fault at all. Also, Caleb Ewan, big loser at this Tour de France. He could have cleaned up at least three stages. But Sagan didn't get any green jersey points on stages one and two. And he's not looking in top condition to even be taking second and thirds regularly in the bunch sprints. I think green is almost gone for him. I think, do you go for a stage in the break, Benji, if you're him at this point?
I think that he should try more than he's trying right now. Currently, he's going solely for the sprints and for the intermediate sprints, and that's not going to be enough for the green jersey nor for a potential stage win. Unless we see more of the sprinters leave the race, it's going to be very difficult for him to win one. And that's why, indeed, going in the breakaway might be an option for him on, I think it's stage 14, but I'm not too sure about it. It has a pretty hilly terrain and not necessarily too dangerous for him either. I think next to Bora, though, there's other sprinters that have disappointed. Arnaud Demar was terrible so far, and it basically pulls the entire team of Groupama down, because Godu is the only one that can show himself. Madua has support for Godu. He's been riding well, but yeah, if Demar is here with an entire sprint train and he doesn't perform, then that's just
OTL
bad for the team.
Week
OTL
one
as well. Yeah.
Like, it's this crazy. Is his AAA priority. They've they've gone away from GC FDJ to go for Demar at this year's Tour de France. He's not competed in a World Tour race since Duars du Vlaanderen back in April. No, in March, Benji. Hasn't competed in a World Tour race since March. His last stage race was Paris-Nice. He was tuning up at smaller races. And he OTLs the first week when he would have been the second best sprinter here easily for the next 2 weeks. And listen, I know it was a hard 3 days, but Cavendish made the time cut off the back of very little preparation and training. So, yeah, there's not many excuses, really. Like, it's just, I think if Cav didn't make the time cut and like 50 guys missed it, whatever, but he was one of the only guys to miss it. So, yeah, disappointing for him for sure. Otherwise,
I've got a few more.
Oh, you got more?
yeah. I think that we could dare to say that Bike Exchange is not performing up to standards. I think that Match is still in the battle for green. Yates has not been able to prove himself, but I don't think we're at the portion in the race yet that suits him perfectly. The mountain stages in week 3 might be the ones where he can go and breakaways and perform
eight.
Better.
Stage 8 was perfect for him. Descent, finish. Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of competition went in the break that day. I think that, they're probably going to go in the break as well in week 3, so he's going to have to step up and perform better. And there's a lot of teams that actually underperformed. And we can also look at Israel Startup Nation, in my opinion. Chris Froome obviously is not on a level that they are, well, they didn't say he was going to be top, but he's dropping with Cavendish right now. And it's partially due to the crash on day 2, 3, one of them, 3, I think. It's a side effect to that, but he's also just not proven to be in the form necessary. I think that there were better candidates to be in the team, and we know that his selection is most likely a marketing ploy, in my opinion. Then you've got Greipel, who is likely to win GC still, because, yeah, he's the legend himself. But I think at this point, Greipel might genuinely be the one sprinting against Cavendish on Champs-Élysées if we keep losing sprinters.
We said it as a joke in the preview. We're like, okay, well, who are you picking, Greipel or Cav, for the Champs-Élysées? It actually is going to happen. I'd just say, Benji, this is a point made for the off-season. And I was talking to David Bailey at Bahrain about this the other day before the tour started. Riders and teams have like a scattergun approach to results or to stages. And I think the big one is Woods has got stages 8 and 9, and he decides to target both from the break, despite 8 having a descent finish in the wet. And like me and you were trying to calculate it. He would need like a minute at the end of that climb. The way Turns was descending, I mean, Woods, I think he got onto the wheel of Pogacar and Izaguirre, so that helped him. But if he was solo, he would have needed such a big gap. And then stage 9 the next day, so reminiscent of Tion 2000, where he was head-to-head with Thomas, a proper 21K, 5.5% mountaintop finish. Not, yes, there's some technical descending, but, yeah, he's got that final climb rather than a descent finish. That seemed to be the more natural one to target. And I don't know how much the fatigue from the day before affected it. Surely it would have had some effect. I mean, it did get distance on the descents anyway. And I think we saw that with Yates as well. He found himself in the stage 7 break, contested it. It's more of a Liège-style stage. And, I feel like some riders aren't targeting the right stages, whereas Moritz, stage 7, targeted that absolutely perfect for him. It's another team.
We can continue. I've got a few more. It's harsh, but I've got a few more. Quebec on X-Hash, I haven't seen them do anything properly in this first week. We've got Flamini obviously out in OTL yesterday. He finished an hour and a half later. That's sad, but it's obviously important. Yeah, he crashed at the start of the stage. Eventually, that's a sad thing, but their team next to him, Hinault, Barbero, Bennett, Campenaerts, Clark, Goggle, Walshite, if you told me they weren't in this race yesterday, I would have been like, I only saw Campenaerts attack twice at kilometer zero and not be in the break afterwards. And that's a fact. Like, they haven't performed, and it's partially because their team here is just not very strong. Quite simple as that. Astana was meant to be the breakaway gods. Yeah. Then Lutsenko ended up at the front of GC, and they failed in the breakaways. They weren't in important breakaways on day 7 and 8. They have the perfect riders for it.
Izaguirre was.
Yeah, correction. On stage 8, they were. Stage 7, when they should have been there, they were not.
Where's Aaron Baru, Benji?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. But then next to those teams, you've got Total Energy. Started off very strong with Latour, showed themselves on day 1, and then Latour implodes a week later, and their GC that they've been working on is completely gone. I haven't seen them too much in the breakaways as well. Trek. That team is not performing. DSM, the only person I've seen so far is Sørenkro Andersen and Case Bol a tiny bit in the sprints. And I'm pretty sure their prize money is one of the lowest as well in this race. Do we consider Ineos a loser here?
I think so, because you can blame them for the Thomas crash. That was his. He just crashed in the middle of the bunch. You've got Port pacing on stage 2 and distancing himself on GC. They kind of look undercooked, and ignoring the pretend Pogacar doesn't exist. Would you say
kind of difficult?
Would you say Carapaz failing to be able to distance Mas and Kelderman 3 days? He did yesterday. It was Mas and some other Jonas Vingegaard 3 days in a row in the high mountains. Him failing to gain any time on them, that would be an underperformance in my view. So yeah, I think so. I think Trek as well. I think Pedersen's not looking good.
There's only a few teams that came out of this first week as winners in my eyes.
If Case Bol, Benji, if he can't get some regular top threes in the sprints in the next 2 weeks, then I don't know what the fuck is going on, because he won the Paris Pure Sprint stage ahead of Sam Bennett. Like, he should be able to win a stage. I think EF just got unlucky, Benji. Magnus Cort, stage 7 perfect, but turns out in that break was Wout van Aert and Van der Poel, and no one wanted to work, whereas normally, you know, someone like him would be wanting a group finish and be quickest. But, okay, that's a lot of teams. Not everyone can be a winner at the Tour de France. I think Movistar have barely been in any breaks. They've had a terrible first week. Lopez out of GC, Soler injured, Valverde out of GC. And I think everything hinges on Mas podium at this point for them. But the next six stages, Benji, I think tomorrow we'll talk about it in a bit more detail, but it's still not going to be a GC day. Stage 11 is double Mont Ventoux. Are you expecting maybe Carapaz trying again on the second descent?
I think that Ineos is going to keep on trying to put pressure on their podium competitors, for example. I think that they're going to start pretending that Pogacar doesn't exist and not use him as the aim of dropping him, but as the aim of trying to secure the second position at least. And that battle is going to happen. I think that Uran will not be the rider attacking, but the one following. I think that Vingegaard, for example, will probably also be that. I don't see Vingegaard attacking too much because yesterday on Tignes, he was the only rider in that group that was suffering and fell through the group while Mas was attacking. The only thing that saved him was the fact that the last 2 kilometers were flat and not uphill. So I think that Vingegaard is the one that's going to be having the most trouble, perhaps, with these consecutive mountain stages in the next 2 weeks. Although I hope that he overperforms because he seems like a nice guy. And his time trial is really good, so he can lose a few seconds. I'm not sure about minutes, but
should
perhaps
they
a minute
Kush
max.
In breaks, or should they put him in the Vingegaard podium prison?
Yeah, prison. 100% prison. Like, because he's not strong enough to win from the break. We saw it the last week, and perhaps he grows in the race, but he's just not strong at the moment to do it. And he always attacks too early as well. Like, he attacks and then falls back when someone else counters him. So I think it's better if you keep him for Vingegaard, that moves into the strategy of Jumbo, that I think they've got they probably are changing their plans as we speak on the rest day. But you've got Van Aert, who in my eyes in the mountain stages should be imprisoned and should be working for Vingegaard as well. In the sprints, he should have an opportunity to go for the sprints from now on to make sure that if Vingegaard fails, because he has never ridden a three-week Grand Tour for himself as GC leader, that's the difference than being a domestique. You can't have rest days in that sense, except for the actual rest days. And that's why I think that it's better if you have at least like one person aiming for things next to it. Van Aert could potentially win a mass sprint somewhere. He did two last year. I don't think his sprints are on the level of last year, but I think that he could still be a contender for them, definitely, because the sprint field is weaker than last year. Quite simple as that. Caleb Ewan is not here anymore, and he's the best sprinter in the world, and Cavendish is not. And I think that they should fire with a few cylinders, but not too many. So Kuz imprisoned, Van Aert imprisoned in mountain stages, sprint though with Van Aert, and then the rest of the team supports Vingegaard throughout the entire stages. It's a podium in the Tour de France. It's not a bloody carnival prize or something. Yeah. It's something that is worth fighting for, and definitely for a youngster like him.
Movistar have the whole team not going in breaks so that they can support Mas going for top five. So I think it'd be unfair to not give Jonas any help at all. I think he does deserve it, to be honest. The next six stages, it's kind of like a sprint stage that could be a break on stage 10. Double Mont Ventoux, stage 12 is a sprint stage, again, where there could be a break. I like the look of stage 13, sprint stage, with a slightly draggy uphill finish. 14, medium mountain. Looks like a Hirschi stage from 2020, but it's not this year, obviously. so I expect that to be break probably. And then stage 15 is the second mountain stage with the Henri de Grange in Andorra. It goes up to 2,400 meters, and then they do another climb. So there's two climbs in stage 14 and 15 where there's bonus seconds at the end, but they're both descent. We don't have a mountaintop finish this before the next rest day, Benji's Mont Ventoux descent finish, the medium mountain stage is the descent finish, and the Andorra stage is also a descent finish. So with that, people were asking this, why do you choose between break or GC? With the descent finishes, it really leans towards a break having more of an opportunity because, say you get a 10-second gap over the top of a climb, your team sets that all up. You don't get to keep those 10 seconds. You now need to work for 20 kilometers on the descent or false flat or whatever on the descent. A lot more energy being spent and you can be caught from behind. So I think this is going to be a lot of breaks this week, Benji. Starting with tomorrow, stage 10, I'll get your view on that. I think a break can win this. If riders like Sturven and some strong rouleurs band together.
Van Moor?
Kung, well, no, Demar. So Kung will be going in a break, right? Yep. Van Moor is a great call. So you've got these two teams whose sprinters are gone, Lotto and FDJ, who want to try and a break with strong riders. De Gendt can get in there as well. I think a break is a really good chance tomorrow, actually, because I don't have a lot of faith in the trains to bring them back. What do you think?
I think so as well. I think that the opposing factor can be that a team like DSM, if they don't send someone in the breakaway, if they don't have a Kral Andersen in this kind of breakaway, which they should, in my opinion.
True, yeah, they have
to. If they don't have someone up there, then they're going to be pacing in the peloton because they see with Gisbol, there's an opportunity for us considering how the sprinters are gone now. And if they keep being gone, then teams like that will start picking up these stages and say, are we going to try and pace? Like a Matthews, for example, his team might see this as an opportunity because, well, the sprinters are not really up to standards. But I'd be like, put someone in the breakaway. They've got riders in their team as well that fit there. And I agree that this stage is leading as well to a breakaway. It's also partially just how do we see if a break is a potential break stage? There's multiple factors. First of all, if it's a completely flat stage and sprint teams are most likely to control. And then you have to look at how many of those teams have the riders to control it. We already said that the Koenig does not really have a complete sprint train here. So Alaphilippe has to kick in the last 5 kilometers every time. And that's a problem.
The last 1,300 meters.
That's true. That's true.
It's crazy.
Tim de Klerk has been godlike, though, when it comes to like keeping the peloton fairly close. And that's God's work for a team like that. Thomas de Gendt did that for Ewan as well. But yeah, again, not there anymore. So I think we'll see a strong break trying to do it here. And I wouldn't necessarily know who would be worthy of controlling that. Because let's say that the Koenig says, oh, Asgreen in the breakaway. Why not?
Then, do you think they can drop Cav on the first two climbs? There's a climb of 7.5 k's at 3%, and then 4 k's at 4%. Nope. Benji, they're going to drill it. Matthews, Bike Exchange in Bahrain will drill it on those climbs. The intermediate sprint is at the top of a 4 k 3.7% climb. If Sagan doesn't pick up 15 or so points, then he's out of he's gone. Green is gone. Or do I don't really see Bike Exchange and Bahrain allowing a break to go because they'll want those guys to be in it like yesterday. So it's going to be a really interesting start to this stage. 83 k's. The first 2 hours are going to be interesting and will define whether this will finish in a bunch sprint. But Benji and I both don't think a bunch sprint is guaranteed. The stage I'm interested to watch is stage 14 in particular. I feel like the Andorra stage might be
break.
Yeah, break probably again, and maybe not so much GC. But 14 is really balanced medium mountain with two longer climbs that are steep, 4.3 k's at 8% with 90 k's done. And then the last climb is Col de Saint-Louis, which has got some steep sections, 4.6 k's, 7%, then a 17 k descent finish. I'd love to see Wout van Aert in the break here, Benji. Or do you think Bike Exchange, Bora, and Bahrain try to keep this tight, or Jumbo-Visma just keep it tight for a reduced bunch sprint?
I think Carapaz attacks here.
Really?
I dare to say that Carapaz attacks there because he's not going to be able to make the differences on the mountains, and I think he's going to try. Well, the problem with Alaphilippe is that I dare to say he's most likely going to try and go in breakaways now because he's so far in GC that he's allowed to go in breakaways, and you might as well do that than try and go from the peloton on which you have better punchers with you also trying to go for the stage. So I think that this will indeed have a good break. And I think that one of the candidates that I see winning at least one stage this week is the likes of a Magnus Cort Nielsen again. I think that he might even win Andorra stage. Not even joking. He's won mountain stages before. And
that last climb's hard. 6.6 k 8%.
Yeah, but if he's a ruler and he's away by that point, then
true. He's looking stage 7. He came third, right? He looked really good on that stage. He's climbing a really, really high level. A Gita I like for Andorra. Okay, to be honest,
I think he's too small. Not like it's a bad thing, but he just
if those two are in the break, if I'm EF, I'm very happy. That's all I'll say. Otherwise, why don't you pick Benji your least, you just sort of gave one, a rider who could win a stage in the next six stages. that people wouldn't expect. I'll give two names, Buani and Case Bold. The sprint field's so, like, Cav's been outstanding, but
yeah,
he can't win. He might not win every stage. So, yeah, Case Bold and Buani looks really good in particular.
I agree on the Buhani case. I'm a bit more doubtful about Case Bold, but you never know. It's very much possible. If I have to look at, like, riders that could still win a stage and have not been showing themselves too much, per se, I think that I've got two names that have been... I've got two names, I think. I think that an overperformance yesterday was Frank Bonamour. He finished fifth on the Tignes stage, performed really, really well. And I think that he's going to be in breaks again, and he's arguably the best rider on B&B Hotels this Tour de France so far, which is something I wasn't expecting personally, because his previous results weren't up to that standard. When it comes to another rider that could potentially take something home, it's not a super easy one to name another rider, but I think that Cataneo's probably going to get allowed to go in a breakaway again. I don't know which stage would fit him best, though.
Vontu?
Yeah. It's possible.
He's a good long climber.
Like, but what if it rains? Then it's Izaguirre territory, you know?
I think Cataneo, he seems to prefer the 20K climbs. You saw his pacing yesterday was outstanding. Speaking of Vontu, Benji, which stage is the most... So if Cav makes it to Paris, he's winning green. I think that's, like, there's not many sprint. We mentioned on stage 10 the placement of the intermediate sprint. Cav
makes it to Paris.
Yeah, I really, if he made it through these last three stages, I think he's, I mean, obviously 3 week recovery, but yesterday was hard and the day.
The winter can't be worse anymore than the last 2 days.
So Vontu, there's a lot of flat beforehand, and then stage Bandoran stage is shallow gradients except for the last climb. I think he should be okay, to be honest. Yeah, and he probably will pick up. What about the Merckx record, Benji? I think it's almost more likely I think he definitely equals it.
Like, personally, I don't care about the Merckx record at all, but I want to see him beat it just for the sakes of having a new person beat, well, not a new person, but a current generation rider beat an old generation rider. I always enjoy seeing that. And that's why I want to have that happen personally. I don't think he cares too much about it, or he pretends not to care about it, at least. I don't know how that is behind the scenes. Apparently, they don't talk about it at all in the team. So that's a thing. I think that Astana just needs to pick it up. Astana needs to do more. I think that we might see another attempt by Mohoric in breakaways. I had a name in my head a second ago, but I forgot. I think Mikkel Wellgren's going to perform well at a certain point.
No, he won't.
He will. He's coming. He's coming, my man.
Dauphiné had an aura. I think maybe stage in the break on that medium mountain stage, perhaps with Court. I'll give you that one, because he came sixth in Dauphiné on a stage like that.
Andorra.
Hey, why do you think he can't climb like that well?
He can climb. He showed it in Swiss. Was it Swiss? I don't even know anymore.
I think the results of Tour de Suisse and Critérium de Dauphiné are not looking as good as they once were.
Yeah, that's true.
After this year's tour so far. But I don't think we gave our predictions for a winner of stage 10. I'm going with Van Moor or Kung. Who have you got?
I think that I dare to say the same, but I was going to go Van Moor, but it's kind of boring if I go for an attacker as well.
Who from the sprint? Because I like
from the
Van,
sprint, I'm going to say... fuck's sake. That's literally what I was going to say.
Let's take the two Belgian favorites.
I mean, Nasser Buhani. There we go. Okay.
All right. Yeah, Barney's been climbing well. Okay, Velo Games. Time for a self-roast. My team, called 20 Teens Nostalgia. Manager is Eusebio Sutton, located in the United Kingdom. I have Roglic, Port, Woods, Van Aert, Kung, Kort, Pache, Uran, and Igita. It's actually not as trash as I thought it was. I did think Igita would have done a little bit better. I like it for the rest of the tour, except for Roglic, obviously. But yeah, not looking good. 15,000th out of 26,000. How's your team going?
It's doing amazing, you know. We're sitting at 8,800. So I'm pretty happy with it, middle of the pack. I'm doing relatively okay if we average that out with the Giro one. So that's all good. And I feel like all these riders are going to strike in week three, man. Come on.
Yeah.
We've got...
Exactly.
Like Primoz Roglic. Fuck.
We got breakaway guys.
Yeah. Higuita. Kort. Yeah. Jesper. I haven't seen him at all this entire race. Aramburu, who will certainly still perform, I promise you. Stage 14. Oh, Aramburu time. Schelling. He's been good in first week. I don't know what his three-week standards are going to be like. I guess we'll figure it out. Hope he goes in a breakaway at some point. But for that to happen, he might need Kelderman to collapse, which I don't wish towards Kelderman. Cosnefroy, he's tried, but hasn't been up to standards. And Pogacar, well, yeah, I think that he's relatively safe until something calamitous happens. Hopefully not towards Pogacar. And then Van Aert, who's going to win who will lose from Buhani tomorrow.
Yeah. the guy leading, or person leading, rather, the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast League is Aretrunt. I don't know what that means in Danish, but hopefully it's not anything offensive. He's got Pogacar, Mollema, Alaphilippe, Carapaz, Cavendish, Moric, Vissegaard, Asgreen, Van der Poel. So pretty good team, except Van der Poel's obviously now abandoned. Will he suffer for that? I mean, second place has also got Van der Poel. Cavendish seems to be the man you'd want in the team. But yeah, everyone's got Van der Poel. So I don't know, maybe someone who's in seventh who's been biding their time with break hunters is who's going to come through. But we hope you enjoyed this rest day recap podcast. We've kept it around half hour, and we'll see you with the stage 10 recap tomorrow. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.